Hi, I'm Steve Clements, and I have a question. As the war in Ukraine turns into a long slog, is the window for a diplomatic solution slowly closing? And was there ever even a window? Let's get to the bottom line. The world is coming to the conclusion that the war in Ukraine could go on for a very long time. And now the West is shifting its response from soft power to hard power. When the West launched a financial war against Russia in February, the hope was that Russian leaders and those who love them would feel the pinch and change course away from war. But it's now obvious that Moscow has enough resources to continue its war effort, and Ukraine is bracing for some intense fighting in its eastern provinces and/or a full nationwide surge. Now the West is shifting its emphasis to supplying Ukraine with more and heavier weapons. At the same time, a major donor conference was held in Poland to provide humanitarian assistance to the millions of Ukrainians who have fled their homes since the start of war, and more than $10 billion was pledged. So what's next for the Ukraine war and the Western response, especially in next-door Poland? And is there any hope for a diplomatic off-ramp to this war? Today, we're talking with Mark Brzezinski, the U.S. ambassador to Poland, who began his post just a few months ago, just as Washington started warning that war between Russia and Ukraine was imminent. Ambassador Brzezinski, it's such a pleasure to be with you today. Look, I just have to start and ask you, you have a perspective and a perch very near the front line of this conflict, unlike most of us. What are the big parts of this that those watching this show should be aware of right now in this very tense moment?
Steve, thank you for having me. What should one watch in this part of the world, Poland, the frontline state for NATO, with regard to this crisis in Ukraine? Three things. One, Poland has a national policy to take all the refugees coming in from Ukraine and put them into people's houses and apartments. Never before has a nation done that with refugees arriving to its border. And more than 2.5 million Ukrainians have come across the Polish-Ukrainian border in the last 30 days, Steve. When I was ambassador to Sweden, the Swedes were rightfully proud about how they had successfully assimilated 1 million refugees over 20 years. Poland has received 2.5 million refugees in 30 days and put them all in people's homes and apartments. The question, though, is what is the capacity maximum as it pertains to that? How many more refugees can Poland take? Two, what happens next in terms of the security crisis? The Poles have not been directly attacked by Russia, but missiles have landed very close to Poland's border. In fact, when President Biden was visiting Poland 2.5 weeks ago, the Russian military lobbed missiles into Lviv, Ukraine, not that far from the Polish border. What's next as it pertains to Poland's security? And then last, unity, European unity, transatlantic unity, global unity as it pertains to this crisis. Most important question is, given that this is not just a Polish problem, and that it is good for others to join Poland in helping carry this burden and solve this problem, to what degree can NATO unity, EU unity, transatlantic unity last and be generated into a unity of purpose to come up with solutions? Because it doesn't look like Putin's leaving Ukraine anytime soon, unfortunately.
Ambassador, recently, several senior Polish government officials told me that they were planning for a future for their nation that looked something like Pakistan, seeing themselves as Pakistan to what Afghanistan was. You know, supplying an insurgency, helping to support an insurgency inside Ukraine. Now, we have to basically, when this was told to me a couple of weeks ago, there was this sense that perhaps President Zelensky's efforts would falter. And we have a different picture today. But Poland was already steeling itself for a unique role in the ongoing long terms of this conflict. And I'm interested in whether they've discussed that with you and what the implications are from a NATO perspective if we have a NATO ally nation that is going to continue to be directly involved with funneling and funding and supporting an insurgency.
Well, Steve, that's a great question, but it's important to remember that Poland was steeling itself for this crisis in Ukraine because it was the U.S. intelligence community that got it right, and got it right well before the outbreak of the conflict. Months before Putin attacked Ukraine, intelligence officials, including our Director of National Intelligence, Avril Haines, was coming to the polls and saying, these are what the defensive and offensive structures of Russian military are, and this is how Russia's political elite intends to use them. You need to be prepared. And so in conjunction with the Polish government, the U.S. embassy here began to work very closely on the 8 border crossings in between Ukraine and Poland, Medyka, Korchowa, to make sure that, first of all, we could guarantee U.S. citizen evacuations out of Ukraine, but then second, to begin to develop capacity for a mass influx of refugees. And so what is going to be happening here? Well, the Ukrainian refugees in Poland have come to Poland because they want to remain close to Ukraine. They're not, many of them are not going on from Poland to Germany, to France, to Spain. The languages are similar, Polish, Ukrainian, Russian languages, those are all Slavic languages. So Ukrainian language and Polish languages are similar, the food similar, and the Ukrainians want to stay close to Ukraine in the hope and the prayer that the Russians do leave and they can get back to Ukraine to rebuild their lives. So they're here for refuge, but the Polish role in the future, hopefully will be one of rebuilding a post-Putin invasion Ukraine, if the Ukrainians are able to kick the Russians out. But as it has been suggested, that may be a long-term thing.
You know, the Poles, as well as the Lithuanians, the Latvians, the Estonians, were among the quickest to align with those U.S. intelligence findings that you know, this war was going to happen and unleash. But a lot of other Western allies saw America as a bit trigger-happy, as a bit paranoid. And there was a definite dissension within Europe about what might be coming. Now, the story may be different today, but it's hard to miss the news, the spat right now between the president of Poland and the president of France. You know, one calling the other a far-right anti-Semite, the other saying, hey, you're negotiating with Pol Pot and Hitler and Stalin is the equivalent of Macron negotiating with Vladimir Putin. And we've also just seen tension, as we saw with France, being recalled from the United States, you know, being represented in the United States just last October over tension. I guess my question to you is, how much of this is surface noise, and what are the real, you know, what are the real character of the European relationship and the NATO relationship from your perspective?
Well, that's an interesting question, because 4 months ago, when I was in ambassador school, Steve, back in Northern Virginia, I was being told by many of my colleagues that we're not going to be able to work with this center-right government, that this is going to be a difficult process of developing alignments. And what I have found, actually, is that this crisis has produced alignments on security and also on democracy and values and the economy that are important in terms of the American-Polish relationship. In other words, just like dialectical behavioral theory, where several things can be true at once, we've been very clear with the Poles that we stand four square with you on your security. And so, Steve, we have now 10,500 U.S. troops in Poland, all on Polish bases. We have Patriot missiles staged to protect Poland. And our president has been clear that we will protect every square inch of Polish territory, because it's a member of NATO, as it's a member of NATO. So we stand four square with the Poles on security, but we also need to see absolute commitment to democracy, to values. And to their credit, the Duda government has produced some forward positive motion when it comes to renewing the licenses of Discovery TVN, when it comes to vetoing what had been called Lex TVN, which was going to take away the license of one of the private TV stations here, and to vetoing the education bill, because we among many others, were alarmed about its contents. And so those are ways that these, so to speak, different areas, security, democracy, values, equality, are interdependent with each other, and we've been able to create a strategic realignment with this PIS government that I think some didn't expect. Europe has its own relationship with Poland as well, and I think Europe is also working to develop a renewed and improved relationship given the crisis, but there are differing interests, as we can see, between the French and the Poles as well.
Well, this raises the interesting question of Ukrainian membership in NATO. And of course, you know, NATO basically welcomed its application in 2008. There's a memo out there that was done by then Ambassador to Moscow, U.S. Ambassador to Moscow, Bill Burns, now director of the CIA, who said that the Russians would be neuralgic about this issue. And that seems to have come to pass. But it raises the interesting question of Ukraine's future. And now the presumption that a lot of folks have, and we've even heard it from President Zelensky, that Ukraine's future must be one of neutrality. Do you support that? Do you think that's smart, given what you just shared about Poland's security, about how Polish people feel about their security?
Well, you know, Steve, Polish membership in NATO, first and foremost, was a decision by the Polish people. They wanted to be locked into what we, Steve, know as the overlay that defines Europe, the overlay of NATO and the EU. And so the Poles voted to join those organizations, and thankfully, the other countries that are members of those organizations voted them in too. And the result is a country on the border of the Ukraine crisis that has not become destabilized by the arrival of almost 3 million refugees in 30 days. And quite frankly, Steve, it wouldn't have been impossible for the Poles, who have built a successful positive growth economy, except for 1 year, COVID year, positive growth economy over the last 30 years, it wouldn't have been impossible for the country to say to you, arriving Ukrainian refugees, we feel your pain, we see what you're going through, and we can't have you here because we've just rebuilt our country and we need to protect it. They did exactly the opposite. I'm here in Warsaw, Poland, where there are 400,000 Ukrainian refugees, some staying at the stadium across the river here, others in people's homes. 10% of the population of Warsaw is now Ukrainian refugees. 10% of Poland's population is recent arrivals from Ukraine. It's an amazing story. And again, the country is under no threat of becoming destabilized. And when you consider the economic motor train for Central Europe that Poland is, if this country did become destabilized, it would collaterally affect about 14 countries in the region immediately. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, due to NATO membership and EU membership, there's a, you know, super regional web that gives the country certainty that it wouldn't have it if it wasn't part of those organizations.
Look, I want to tell our audience that Mark Brzezinski is not only an ambassador to, you know, previously to Sweden. You know, he directed Arctic Affairs at one point. He was direct, you know, ambassador to Poland. You were director for Russia and Eurasia in the National Security Council. You've been watching Vladimir Putin and those around him for a very long time. You have insights that most of us don't. And I guess I have this foreboding sense of what may yet come. You know, we've just seen the appointment of Russian General Alexander Dvornikov, the so-called butcher of Syria, butcher of Aleppo, who is going to be, you know, now responsible for this war in Ukraine. President Zelensky has been saying the worst may yet to come. He needs more. I guess my question to you is, when America watches this nightmare, which is already bad enough, further unfold, what is going on? Both what can we do more, and then secondly, what's going around in Putin land? I mean, what are some of the people around him saying and doing? I mean, that's something that none of us have as much purview into as much as you might.
Sure. Well, I was working, Steve, on the National Security Council when the question emerged early one morning: who is Vladimir Putin? Because he had arrived in Moscow from St. Petersburg plucked by then President Boris Yeltsin to be his prime minister. He literally came out of nowhere, came out of the KGB, and there was very little known about this man, who was then immediately identified as the successor for Boris Yeltsin, being groomed by Boris Yeltsin in order to cover for Boris Yeltsin and his family and you know, the allegations, the criminal allegations that were being made against members of Boris Yeltsin's family, not just in Russia, but in Western Europe and so forth, and to provide the Yeltsin family that kind of cover. And one of the first things Vladimir Putin was assigned by President Yeltsin was the pacification program the Russians undertook in the North Caucasus in Chechnya, which was cruel and brutal. So what am I worried about? I'm worried about a repeat of that pacification program in Ukraine. What is it that we can do, Steve? We can supply and we can sanction and we can support. We can supply the Ukrainian fighters and what fighters they are showing the world they are. These people who are literally coming out of their day jobs, who many of whom haven't been in the military for a while, are protecting their homeland with guts and with support from the West. It is important that we continue to do that. Second, sanction. Sanctions take a while, Steve, to have an effect, but I'm proud I work for a government that has sanctioned almost 400 entities and individuals all close in to Putin to levy the pressure on those who benefit from Putin's regime and who in turn, we hope, will pressure Putin to stop what he's doing because it is ruining their lives and that of their families. And then lastly, developing a global support system to either take in Ukrainian refugees who are leaving or to support the humanitarian crisis. I'm so pleased that today here in Warsaw, David Malpass, the president of the World Bank, is here to talk very practically and tangibly about what the bank and the global community can do for this part of the world and the people who have experienced upheaval here.
That's such important news about the World Bank. I didn't know that, and I appreciate you sharing it. But we also are interested in justice and what comes, if there is an after, what that after looks like. And it occurs to me the United States is not a member of the International Criminal Court. How do we participate legitimately, actively in the assignment of accountability in a phase in the future? Because the president and Secretary of State Antony Blinken have said that Russians have committed war crimes that we're going to provide. So what is our role in that process, given our lack of standing in the ICC?
Well, they have said that, and I think the first thing is to develop a support system and an infrastructure to support the investigation of what has happened. And I agree with my president and my Secretary of State that it looks very much like war crimes have been done, and evidence needs to be gathered to prosecute those war crimes. We saw that successfully done out of the Balkans Wars in the late 1990s, and I am certain we're going to see that done as this conflict, you know, moves forward and hopefully one day concludes. You know, we live at a time when it's more easy than ever before to forensically bear witness and forensically collect evidence on what has happened. And first and foremost, you can see that from all the video footage that is coming out of Bucha and other cities that have been victimized. And Secretary Blinken has stood up a section in the State Department to provide material and leadership as it pertains to supporting the investigation of war crimes. And I think that that's an important first step.
You know, we have a situation, Mark, where there are some states in Europe that are aligned with us, but nonetheless remain highly dependent upon Russian coal, upon Russian gas. Poland is one of these that's an importer. Just very quickly, how do we manage our equities with a nation that we're war? How do we not become the funders of Russia's ongoing war efforts?
Sure. Well, you know, Energy is one of those industries that is being completely disrupted by the crisis in Ukraine. It's just a fact that Poland had to wean itself away from Russian energy sources, and Poland had to wean itself away from coal. And the Ukraine crisis is just giving greater intensity to that progress that Poland is making.
Let me just ask you finally, Ambassador, I really appreciate your time. I recently met with the Polish ambassador to the United States, who made the point that there was not a single refugee camp for Ukrainian refugees in Poland, that, as you said, they had been brought into homes, into apartments. We're talking millions of people absorbed into the private life there. President Biden has talked about potentially opening up the United States to refugees from Ukraine up to 100,000 or so, which means your embassy, your consular function, will likely become the front line of that effort. How open is America going to be? Are we going to be able to be part of that cushion and support for Ukrainian refugees here in the United States? And is your team going to process them?
It's a great question, because consular services and processing has moved from Ukraine, from U.S. Embassy Kiev, which continues to operate, but out of Poland. And one hasn't seen lines in front of the U.S. Embassy Warsaw waiting for visas for a while, and now you see them again. I think the most important point, Steve, though, is that as the Poles take in millions of refugees into their homes, that the Poles hear clearly basically two lines that I always say to the Poles when I'm on Polish television, and that is, Polska jest bezpieczna, Poland is safe, and Polska jest zabezpieczona, Poland is secure. And Poland is safe and secure because America stands with it, and America will fight for every square inch of Polish soil because it is a member of NATO. I am grateful to President Biden, to Vice President Harris, to Secretary Blinken, Secretary Austin, and the top U.S. officials who have been here in Poland in the last 5 weeks. That is a lot of VVIPs coming through and saying the same message. And every time they said it, it wasn't less important. The Poles need to get that kind of reassurance as they do that heavy lift. And it was important when President Biden was here. He quoted the famous Polish general, Tadeusz Kościuszko, the Polish general who came to America during the Revolutionary War 200 plus years ago and fought for American freedom, and was famous for saying, "Za wasza wolność I nasza," for your freedom and ours. More than ever, as the Poles do this lift and spend their own money to carry this burden, they need to hear that from the United States of America.
Wow, powerful. We could have this conversation for hours, but I know we don't have that time. But I just want to thank my good friend, U.S. Ambassador to Poland, Mark Brzezinski. Thank you so much for your candor and for you being with us today.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me.
So what's the bottom line? The war in Ukraine has been really ugly, with possible war crimes committed, and it could get uglier. With no end in sight, sitting around and hoping that it's going to end soon just won't help. So what's the world supposed to do? My guest today is sending a message of American support for Ukraine and NATO allies, but he's also sending a signal that Russia could lose so much more if Putin escalates this war. Already, Russia is becoming cut off from the world and the gains it made over the past few decades. I very much hope I'm wrong on this, but right now it looks like escalation is more likely than not. And that grim reality is what the whole world needs to brace for. And that may mean a period of sacrifice and hardship for many, not just in Ukraine, but all over the world. And that's the bottom line.